I'm Bay, and you're listening to Bay Baltimore, a weekly pop culture and society podcast recorded in a quiet neighborhood in Baltimore. This episode, I watched a movie on HBO a couple of weeks back now called, well, I think I'm about to butcher this name, but I'm going to say it anyway. Anyway, it's called Hotel Coppelia, and I want to talk about it. Okay, so by now, the Asley Brothers versus Earth, Wind, and Fire versus has happened. I didn't see it. I just watched the parodies because I don't know. I am naturally anti, so I'm involved in the joke after the fact, or I read the comment. I'm one of those weirdos that sometimes instead of watching a thing first, I'll go listen to what other people are saying about it. Not to form my own opinion, but just I enjoy the enthusiasm with which people either love or loathe a thing. And I still might end up watching it anyway, even if the whole thing has been spoiled. I usually only do that if I only usually watch it anyway if I really wanted to watch the thing anyway, but I just really wanted to hear other people talking about it, confirming or dispelling any of the ideas that I had about it. I don't mind total spoilers. I don't mind those at all. Because I'm still, if I wanted to watch it, I'm still watch it regardless. Like, you not finna stop me from doing what I intended to do all along. Anyway, yeah, and if anything, like depending on the thing that it is, I will watch that thing multiple times anyway to catch little context clues, to catch clues. So it really doesn't matter to me. I'm that one of those weirdos. Plus, I think I've shared this before. I don't love surprises. I don't not like them. I just would prefer not to have them. So, of course, it stands to reason that I spoil things for myself all the time, which is why I spoil things on this show. So that I try to be good and share when I'm about to spoil a thing. And even when I'm trying not to spoil, I know I still do in some aspects. So I'm a work in progress. Anyway, if you're new to the show, welcome. Thank you so much for listening. However you got here, one of your friends forwarded it to you. You stumbled upon it because maybe you were looking up the movie for today and You've ran to this top, you clicked on this. I review movies. I talk about Baltimore. I talk about politics. I talk about pop culture. Do I talk about politics? Not really. I kind of talk about a myriad of things, and then I end up talking about some sort of program, video or something. Yeah, so anyway, welcome. If you can't hear, that is the light rail alerting someone to get out the way. Because it never ceases to amaze me, the light rail, at least, talking about the Baltimore, the light rail here in Baltimore, it honks at somebody at least once an hour. Since, I work from home these days, and at this point, like, since we moved, I actually prefer working. I don't mind working from home here because, I just feel less stressed here. Even though it's just as loud, I still feel less stressed here because I'm not always fixing things. Like, one day I'll tell the story of where the hubby and I lived and that whole thing, but it's still too fresh. Anyhow, So anyway, even though it is just as loud, and if you're listening carefully, I don't know if you can hear it, but there is someone who's leaf blowing the leaf in the street. You know what I mean? Whatever the term is. Cleaning the streets with the leaf blower thingy because, you know, pollen and blooming and all of that. It's spring. Anyway, so you could probably hear that, but that's not unlike what I would have heard of a morning where we were living in Northeast Baltimore. Anyway, it's fine. But it's not super quiet, but I'm more relaxed here. So what was I talking about? Anyway, yeah. So I always say it's a quiet neighborhood. I never live in a quiet neighborhood. Baltimore is not quiet. unless you live in one of those, I don't know where you would live, where it would be quiet. Anyway, not in the city. Anyhow, so verses happen. I was sorry if you're new. Also, I ramble. But I get back to the point eventually. Anyway, so didn't watch Verses, but I watched, I'm going to be honest with you, maybe 15 minutes of the parody with Afion. Afion, what's the old guy's name? Not Bigums. That Bigums is his ego. Shoot. And anyway, Godfrey. I can't call his name. He used to be a football player. You know who I'm talking about. He was a football player for many years. But one of his characters is Bigums, or is that a totally different football player? Anyway, can't call his name, but he's hilarious. And one of his signature moves, which he did when he was portraying Ronald Isley, was one of his signature moves is to, because he's very flexible for, and I guess the joke is, for a big guy, he's super flexible. And so anyway, this thing that he does is he always lifts his leg in the air and always points some shoe that it's a, or some foot, like left or right foot, that is adorned with some ridiculously bedazzled or ridiculously shorn shoe. You know what I mean? Like the shoe is just ridiculous. And so in portraying what, oh my goodness, what is his name? Now it's going to haunt me. It's going to haunt me. Afion. Girl, why don't y'all know who Afion is? Well, Afion Crockett. Oh my gosh, Afion Crockett. Godfrey. I don't even know how to spell Godfrey's name. Spice Adams, Jiminy Christmas, Spice Adams. Anyway. Afion Crockett, Spice Adams, and Godfrey. So everybody is raving over Godfrey's portrayal of Steve Harvey because duh. Like, Godfrey been funny. Like, I don't know if everybody understood that, but Godfrey been funny, and of course his Steve Harvey impression is immaculate. Spice Adams is a fool, and of course he's like, so I just got a phone call. As per usual, anytime I'm in the middle of recording, I can't just be totally interrupted, no matter the time, unless it's like after midnight, which I'm gonna be asleep. I don't think I'll ever record after midnight. I haven't, and I don't plan to, but maybe I should start, because certainly people call me and have need of me. Anyway, what I was saying was, Spice doesn't look like, none of these comedians, Spice, Afion, or Godfrey, look like the comedians they're portraying. It's just they embody their mannerisms, right? So we already talked about Godfrey. Spice Adams does not look like Ron Isley, but Spice does this thing where he portrays the cool uncle, right? That has, and his wardrobe, it has been said already, but I feel the need to say it again. Spice has a wardrobe that is uber deep. And of course, emergency vehicles coming through. I'm gonna just keep talking because Lord knows how long it's gonna take. Anyway, with the echo down here, like they could literally just be sitting there with sirens just going and you can't tell. Or they could be like four blocks down the street and you still can't tell sometimes. Anyway, Spice Adams' wardrobe is deep. He has every tacky piece of clothing you could imagine, or he knows how to tackify fine clothing. Regardless, of course he had a cape, something like a raincoat cape, that was similar to what Ronald Isley's, what I could only describe as an actual mink coat, looked like for the actual affair. And since the show was, the Verses was like 4 hours long, something like that, it stands to reason, I would not put it past Spice to have gone to get that outfit, knowing exactly where to go, like literally purchased it. He could have had it, and that would have been epic. I also think he has the means and is motivated enough to do the parody, to do the joke, that he would go find something similar. But then again, he could have already had it. It's just funnier to me that he would have found it. He would have gotten it specifically for this, because that just shows the range and the lengths that he would go to be a fool. And then Afion, can we? So Afion played Verdine. First off, I know I've seen Afion. Looking at his face, I know I've seen him as a comedian in things before. I've just not super versed in his comedy. And so Afion portrayed Verdine, who, I don't even know Verdine, what Verdine's last name, but Verdine, huge character in Earth, Wind, and Fire. Oh, sorry. I said Spice portrayed Ron Isley, who's arguably, well, not arguably, he is the leader of the Isley brothers. Verdine, I'm not 100% sure if he was the lead, or maybe he was just the co-lead, because he certainly wasn't the lead singer, but he was like the co-lead. And anyway, one of the things that, even when I didn't understand that his name was Verdine, and when I found out his name was Verdine, I was like, yeah, of course his name isn't Steve. It's not Harold. Of course his name is not Harold. Look at the fabulousness. Look at the extraordinary presentation that he puts forth. His name can't be ordinary. So of course this man's name is Verdine. Anyway, hair played. Laid. Like Snoop would lay his hair, but like Verdine been doing that since, been doing it. Like been doing it, been laying his hair just as flat, just as straight as it could be. You know what I'm saying? With some luster and some sheen. And then no soft sheen, no pink oil. Or I don't know, maybe he used pink oil. I doubt it. That stuff looked light and flowy and bouncy. Also very stick straight. Like not Afion, but like Verdine, immaculately dressed, because duh. And so cool as a cucumber, because Earth, Wind, and Fire, duh. Anyway, so Afion is playing him. And see, this is the thing about good comedians. You don't need to look like the person you're trying to portray. It's where a lot of people, and I'm echoing now, something that, what's the comedian that's sitting on RuPaul's Drag Race right now? I cannot call her name. I'm seeing her face. But if you watch RuPaul's Drag Race, the current season of RuPaul's Drag Race, it's the black woman comedian. She is in a lot of things. She's currently on another show, but she's on the, and of course they're all loud outside of the window, moving on. But I can't remember where she's a comedian, and I cannot call her name. I feel like she's a co-host on a talk show, though. Maybe it's The Talk? No, maybe it's not The Talk. I don't know. Anyway, but if you look up RuPaul's Drag Race, she is a host, or a judge. She's a judge on that show for this season. And anyway, one of the things she said, there was not the Snatch Game. What was one of the challenges a couple of episodes ago? It was like a roast. It was a roast. So they were doing the roast, which they do every season these days. There's going to be a roast, right? So you need to be prepared, like certain challenges or fixtures, and you always need to be prepared. And it's so funny to me in that show, I'm doing a sidebar. It's so funny to me in that show how contestants will come on there. This series has been on for over a decade. RuPaul's Drag Race has been on for over a decade, but there are certain challenges that are a staple on that show. They have been happening for maybe not the whole 13 years, but like at least 5 or 6 of those 13 years, this thing has been a staple on the show. It's Snatch Game, without question. Snatch Game. There's going to be a rusical. There's going to be a musical. You're going to need to sing and dance. Maybe you're going to need to sing and dance more, but you definitely know there's going to be an element where you're singing and dancing. And now the roast, which I don't remember when the roast competition began on the show, but it's been a part of it for at least 5 or 6 seasons at this point. And so we still have people coming on here who have, whose whole drag career began in the middle of RuPaul's Drag Race. So they've had time to see this. They've had time to go, even if you didn't know about RuPaul's Drag Race until this year, until last year, last season, you have, everybody can bootleg TV if you don't, if you can't get it the regular way, and you can see, you can catch the pattern. And so anyway, this particular comedian whose name I can't remember, this black woman comedian who's a guest panelist on, who's a guest judge on RuPaul's Drag Race this season, was giving a critique to one of the contestants. And now that I'm thinking about it, probably wasn't even the roast, but she was giving a critique to the contestants. One of the contestants, and I think everybody's been talking about this now, but her name was Utica. The contestant's name was Utica, and Utica did not want to, Utica's white, and did not want to, like, it was the teaming challenge. And so they were teaming up. And I am getting to this point, I promise you, I'm getting to my point. But she was teamed up with a black woman, Simone, a black contestant, Simone. Simone is a black woman. The character Simone is a black woman, and her aesthetic is just ghetto fabulous. Like anything, hood creativity, actually. Black creativity and just as, because it's not even hood, it's just creative and colorful and very black, like something that black people would wear. And if you don't understand what I'm saying, I don't know how to describe it to you, but it's very black. It's something like auntie hair in the 90s, but like before they were aunties and they was doing it out in the club. They thought they was cute because they were cute and that was the style back then. Like very that, very, very much doing things like that. Very innovative, like the Bronna Brothers hair show. Like it gives me very much creativity, but like just creativity that you would see at the Bronna Brothers, like creativity with hair, creativity with clothing, anything and something that would be seen by mainstream society as quote unquote hood or ghetto. You just mad because you can't pull it off, because that's what that is. Because anyway, I'm about to go on another tangent, but moving on. So that's Simone's aesthetic. It's very black, very what you would consider black and avant-garde. And really turning things that seem like kitschy or kooky and turning them into like high fashion, but like it's undeniably black in terms of the nod to our movies and things like that and our pop culture and stuff like that. And anyway, so the challenge was that you turn your partner, they were partnered together, and the challenge was that you turn your partner into your drag aesthetic. And so Utica's very white and very like one of those progressive whites that's like, oh, that sounded terrible. One of those progressives that is like overly apologetic, like, and instead of, I would say, instead of like putting thought and rationality into why this thing is wrong, they just automatically say that a thing is wrong without providing critical analysis. So when you're, yeah, it's like, you know it's wrong, you just don't know why it's wrong. And so you just apply the same logic to everything with a broad brush. And when you do that, you lose context. And then you also come off as inauthentic. And so I think that's been the critique of Utica this season, is that she's borderline, like, you're doing too much. Like, I can't tell if you are sincere about this or you're just too scared to say the wrong thing and offend people, so you're just doing too much. And you're being overly sensitive. And so in this moment, the Simone with her aesthetic, and Utica, by the way, Utica is just super out there, very artistic, very creative, very like kooky and stylish, but very weird and out there. So Utica was supposed to put Simone into her aesthetic, and Simone was supposed to put Utica into her aesthetic. And of course, Simone was going to put Utica looking like whatever Halle Berry's character it was in Baps, like her character. She was going to put her, wait, was that Niecy's? No, it was, not Halle Berry's, but the other ones. Anyway, she was going to put her, Simone was going to put Utica in BAPS, one of the iconic BAPS outfits, the leopard and the leopard print with the orange trim. I can't remember who wore that. I can't remember who wore that, because I definitely remember Hallie wore like a electric orange suit. And I think the actress who, God bless rest her soul, she passed away last year. I think she wore the leopard. She wore the leopard with like the orangey yellow trim or whatever. Anyway, so, but my point is, she was going to put her in that, but like she wasn't going to darken her skin in any way. She was going to leave Utica's skin the way it is and have her have the blonde hair like it was, but like very, the whole point was make it look like this, she's your part of your drag family. And in order to do that, you need to do my style. And so that's what Simone was trying to do. And anyway, Utica gave up this big fuss because she didn't want to seem like she was appropriating culture. And again, it took some convincing from Rue. It took some convincing from Simone and some of the other drag queens in the competition to be like, you are trying to mimic Simone. You're acting like you're in her family. You're literally mimicking Simone. This is the challenge. Mimic. We're not telling you to culturally appropriate. We're telling you to be Simone. And she's like, and they're like, girl, we're not putting you in blackface. We just need you to embody Simone. And you really need to sell this, because I'm putting you in these garments. But if your affect is off, you're going to kill it for both of us. So like, get your thing together. And so after all of that consternation and all of that stuff, they get to the runway. And what does Utica do? Utica embodies, like she essentially puts on Simone's persona. And of course, I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think they won, because they had both embodied each other's style so well. It was undeniable. You had to. And the point was, Utica didn't look anything like Simone. They were skinny and tall, and that's where it ended. Their drag is completely different. Simone is very polished and very, even though she's like being kitschy and fun and funny, she's still very polished and powerful and commanding. Whereas Utica's drag was very kind of, again, it's kitschy and all over the place. It's very artistic, but nevertheless, it's meant to shock and weird you out. Creep you out and weird you out. But anyway, so it took some transformation for the both of them, but they embodied it and it was great. And of course they won the challenge. And my point is, when they were winning the challenge, or when they were being critiqued, this black woman comedian who is a guest judge on the show this season said, and I wish, I can't remember her name, but maybe I'll put it in the show notes if I remember. But she said, you know, and see, this is the thing. Everybody thinks that you have to look like, you have to physically look like the person in order to get a good parody down. No, that's not it. If you're a really good parody, you don't have to look like them at all. You just have to embody them, mind, spirit, and soul. So you have to get their affect right. You have to get the cadence of their speech right, or exaggerated, especially if you're trying to be funny, but not too much that it's disrespectful. Like, you need to concentrate on embodying that person more than you need to concentrate on looking like them. And if you go back to the parody of the Earth, Wind, and Fire verses, freaking Godfrey had on a purple t-shirt and something like a fedora, but like one of those just casual fedoras, where, if there's such a thing, whereas Steve Harvey had on like a silk, well, it looked silk, but it was probably, I forgot the material, but anyway, it was a purple, like a pristine purple shirt. I'm quite sure the shirt was silk, but like purple on purple outfit with a bad fedora. And I think it was all black fedora too, but Godfrey had on a purple shirt, but it didn't matter because Godfrey was still embodying Steve Harvey. Steve Harvey, as compared to Godfrey, looks a little on the light complexion side. None of that matters, because you can't tell nobody that Godfrey did not embody Steve Harvey. Likewise, what we know is that Verdeen is a very beautiful chocolate, deep chocolate brown. And Afion is light complexion. Didn't matter. Because guess what Afion did? Afion put on that good shake and go wig. Okay. And was using it at that prop, using it. And it must have been secured decently well. He put some energy into securing it decently well because he kept just shaking that hair. He had his little taco meat out. You know, I keep saying that. That sounds bad. You know what I mean? He had his chest out and he had on them slacks and he was preening. He was walking around preening. Because Verdeen know he fine. No, Verdeen always knew he had style, always knew he had it, right? And been pulling people since been pulling people. So like if you're going to embody somebody like Verdeen, who wears a pearl necklace, and say something to him, and that's a whole nother conversation about fragile masculinity, because you put you on a pearl necklace, a pearl necklace has no gender. It's just style. And the way Verdeen looked, if he just, come on, like, you could never. You literally could never. Many could never, because they're too much of a punk to, like, for real dress and not care what people think. But, like, when you do it tough like Verdeen, it's just is what it is. And so, Afion had a big chore, but nevertheless, oh, he did that. Now, was his outfit, like, not up to par? Sure. But you got it. You definitely got it because he did it. You hear me? He did it. And I was like, you better. Everybody loved Afion's interpretation of Verdeen because, duh, like, it's about the mannerisms. It's about being cool. Yes, I have on this jacket that probably need to be ironed. Yes, I have on these pants that probably ain't the flyest. But, you know, yes, this shirt ain't the crispest. But you know what? I'm going to wear it. Like, I'm going to put this pocket square in there and I'm going to wear this thing out. I'm going to put this. Yes, this wig ain't the best. But am I going to wear it and act like this hair is laid and beautiful? Yes, I'm going to do that. And so Afion did a good job. And then, of course, Spice Adams, who, again, looks nothing like Ronald Isley, but because he is committed to being a fool, was hilarious. And just they wore it out. And the thing about it is their skit was like 45 minutes. No, I did not watch that whole thing, but it was hilarious. Anyway, when you are allowed to just be, and the thing about Afion, Spice, and Godfrey is they're allowed to poke fun. They're allowed to be, and no shade, they should have a primetime show at this point. Like, the three of them are hilarious. Will it be that funny all the time? No, but like the fact that in those four hours, they probably had thought of this beforehand, but in those 4 hours, they had gotten a whole thing together and was ready to go live as soon as when the verses was off, lets you know that these people are consummate professionals. And if given the platform, they can do so much more. And I just can't help but think how many more people are out there like that, that just happen to not catch the lightning. And I truly hope that Afion, Spice, and Godfrey have caught the lightning. Godfrey been out here for a minute. But anyway, I hope they caught the lightning and their platform can be elevated, or they can be elevated to a higher platform. But anyway, so why am I even talking about any of this? Because I was watching all of this weekend, and in preparation for the coming weeks, you know, I would like to watch a lot of media, and there's just been a lot of things happening in real life, and I'm trying to stay focused. I'm still on my pregnancy journey or becoming pregnant journey, and the ups and downs with that beforehand and all of that stuff, like just, you know, coming into the spring, figuring out what the heck the fall is going to be like or the summer is going to be like, and into the fall. Like at this point, I'm really into the fall because there's just so many things happening. And so, or so many things I need to think about. And so, you know, I'm just trying to stay one step ahead. So I call myself being a little proactive. I watched the film that we're going to talk about today, and then I also watched another one because I was trying to get a little bank together. Girl, what was the film that I tried to watch? It was actually not a film. It was a series. I'm going to say a few things, and then I'm going to move the heck on. I tried to watch Them. Amazon's Them. I am so frustrated at myself that I feel like I wasted hours. Not because a few hours, because I didn't watch the whole series. I would not do that. Not because the actors were particularly bad. I appreciate every one of those beautiful brown, hued actors. That movie is terrible. It is literally terrible, and I'm not even the audience. And that's the end of it. I'm not finna get my blood pressure up again because I was so I felt disrespected by that whole thing. Even though the actors were great, I still felt disrespected. I want more for them. I want justice for them. I want those actors to be in better films with better parts. Moving on. But today's episode is going to be all about Hotel... girl, I'm about to say Cupayera. What? Shoot, I didn't mess up. Got me thinking about them all frustrated. Hotel Coppelia. And I'm pretty sure I'm saying that wrong. Coppelia. I'm going to Google it. Anyway, I'm going to say, just forgive me. Forgive me, y'all, for messing it up. Hotel Coppelia. Saw it on HBO. I never saw it coming. It came out March 9th, and I will, in the next segment, I'll talk more about the details before I go into the film. But I did not regret watching it at all. I'm actually glad I watched it. And I wish it was a series so that it could explore more, but I'm glad for what I got. And I'll go into it. I saw so many things in that, hour and 30? I saw so many things that I wasn't expecting. And while military conflict was a huge part of this thing, there were so many different things that were happening in this. Opened my eyes to so many different things that I just felt it compelled to talk about it. It was a good film, truly, truly a good film. I want more, and I'll tell you why I want more from it in the next segment. Okay, so Hotel Coppelia. It's not Coppelia. It's I'm just gonna land on this, and again, I apologize. It's Coppelia is what I'm gonna say is the pronunciation of the movie. Anyhow, this film I stumbled across because. Well, the way I did it was kind of funny because I can't remember if I shared this before, but so blah, 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 blah. In our move, we have Xfinity. And so, of course, you know, when we were moving our service from one location to the next, of course, one of the sales representatives who was helping me to do that, or at the very least giving me pointers just to, even though they tell you they lie to you on the commercials telling you it's just like you can do it in less than a minute. Yeah, you can do it in less than a minute, but you still have to call them and make sure that you get new equipment if it's been, depending on how long you've had your old stuff. And obviously they use that opportunity to upsell you because duh. And so of course they got me because one of the things that hubby has been complaining about is that we don't have TNT and he is a basketball fan is an understatement. If you knew my husband, even if you had seen his page on one of his social pages casually, you would know that he is an avid basketball connoisseur and news, stats, all of that junk. Like it's in his blood. And so anyhow, so us for all of these years, we've never had TNT. So he's either had to pay for it outright or bootlegged or something. Cause I was just not, I'm like, dude, we not home like that to be increasing our sports package or not sports package, but like, anyway, blah, blah, blah. It wasn't included. And I wasn't trying to, add it because that was an account that I set up and I'm like, I don't see the need. So anyway, but so of course the person that I spoke with obviously was trying to upsell us, which they ended up doing because I watch HBO faithfully. And so she told a lie. I feel like it was a lie, but I sure didn't look into it to check. But she was like, yeah, well, TNT is included and you even get some basic ESPN. I was like, ooh, okay, bet. Boo will be happy. But HBO isn't included. You got to pay for that. And I'm like, what? You mean to tell me I should have pushed back, but what she was saying was HBO Max. And if I'm honest, part of the reason why I didn't push back is because I actually did want HBO Max, because there's been a lot of content coming out on HBO Max that I haven't had access to because I just had HBO. And so she got me on the upsell, but I wanted to be got, obviously. So, but what I didn't understand was that you accessed HBO Max differently. Like, I knew that there was an app, but I was like, but I have Xfinity. So blah, 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 blah. I didn't quite catch for like a couple of weeks. I didn't quite catch that I was supposed to download HBO Max. And so when I finally got around to doing it, that's when this whole world of different movies that I hadn't seen before started to open up. So I started to save, you know how it is if y'all have HBO Max, started to save old shows that I hadn't seen in years, old movies, Criterion classics that I hadn't seen in years. I finally saved Black Orpheus. It's been a minute. I used to have a hard copy, like I used to have a CD. I had the movie on Blu-ray, but it's been gone. I couldn't find that. So, you know, I was going through just saving movies. And anyway, naturally just looking through HBO to find, just talk about, you know, figure out what's coming up. And anyway, I've stumbled on this movie that I hadn't heard any lead up to. Again, I got to be watching. It's just, maybe I just don't watch HBO enough, or I'm not sitting on it for long periods of times that I don't see that in the algorithms on my socials or whatever, the little spiders aren't picking up the fact that I'm watching HBO, and so then they should be pushing certain content to me. Anyway, so I just stumbled upon this and I was just like, okay, bet. Movie based in Dominican Republic in a time of conflict that includes it's Black and brown people. Okay, I bet. Or Afro, the diaspora is here. Okay, I'm fine with that. So I watch it and there was so much. It was one of those movies, and I think I said this a minute ago, but it was one of those movies that feels like it felt to me like the director and the writers felt like they had this one opportunity. They didn't want to squander it. And I really hate it when writers and directors feel like they got to squeeze everything in this one opportunity, because, you know, it you miss opportunities to kind of suss out more detail about something else. And this story is certainly that. This story has a whole lot of elements into it that I wish had more time to simmer, but we had to get on with the show. So anyway, overall, I mean, I've already said it. I did enjoy this film. I have a lot of questions. I have some frustrations. But nevertheless, it was a very interesting film. And gave me some context that I had never known before and had never thought to look into before, if I'm honest. So before I go too much further, let me give you the particulars. So again, it was an HBO Max, sort of affair. I thought I had seen it. So yeah, I did. So the initial release of this film was on March 9th. But I think it popped up into my viewing in and around the 26th. March 26th, even though I didn't watch it until recently. So it's in Spanish, but it's subtitled. So its producer was Rafael Elias Munoz, who I guess I'm supposed to know, but I just don't. I don't know him. It's got a 6.4 out of 10 on IMDb. 92% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes, and 3.4 out of 5 out of Boxd, and I really don't know who the heck that is. 91% of Google users did enjoy this film, and I can see why. I enjoyed this film. I gave it a thumbs up too, because it's an enjoyable film in terms of the content, in terms of the depth of some of the characters, even though we don't get much. The ending was weird too, but I guess it wasn't weird, because it's really this story. Let me just back up a taste. This movie very much feels like a little bit of a hodgepodge, partly because it's based on a true story. It's loosely based on a true story. This hotel and the lead person did exist, but the stories are interpreted. The stories of the people at this hotel are interpreted. The circumstance is a little bit interpreted too. But nevertheless, it's clearly a story that Rafael and Jose wanted to tell. And so I get it. I get why it was kind of, it felt like it needed more time because it did need more time. But like for some of the story lines to develop, but at the same time, I do appreciate this thing for existing. So let me just go ahead and tell you, because if you haven't seen this, you're probably wondering like, well, what am I talking about? So if you haven't Googled it already. So the synopsis, basically the plot of this whole thing is that prostitutes hope for a better life when freedom fighters stage a coup in the Dominican Republic in 1965. Going a step further, Hotel Capella is basically like a flop house. Do you know what a flop house is? A flop house is a place that is a hotel, but is really known for being a place where women who are sex workers, which is not a term that has, that when you use flop house, that's not a term that you necessarily associate with the sex positive term sex worker. But it's what it is. A flop house, and for all intents and purposes, is a place predominantly where sex workers work out of. It is a safe-ish environment, or at least it's a stable environment. It's a place where it's a static place where they can do their business. It may or may not be super safe, even until today. It may not be super safe. But nevertheless, there is a communal sort of space to it. And there are protectors, can be protectors there. What I will say is this, a flop house doesn't just have to be a place where sex workers work. It can also be a place where people who don't have a whole lot of money go to as well. It was kind of one of those, the proprietors, and again, I'm not, I haven't said it before, but I'm saying now, just as a rule, I don't know everything. I'm only basing it off of limited knowledge. When I, long story short, I've shared before, my parents were missionaries. And anyway, I went on a mission trip to build things, which I understand how problematic missionary and all that stuff is, because it's one thing for you to share your religion. It's quite another to pour down your someone's throat and then make it make your help conditional on giving your help on the condition that you listen to all this stuff that I got to tell you, and then you do this thing that I tell you to do. Like that's where the problem is. But I enjoyed the building, the community infrastructure that at least the group that I was with helped provide. Can't speak for anybody else anyway, and continue to provide even after we left. Can't speak for nobody else. And the system that we created, system of care and community that we were trying to create. Again, I can't speak for any other organization, anybody else, because let's be real, the root of it is very much colonizing in its core. Savage, you know, civilizing the savages is basically the core of that thing. But nevertheless, moving on. Anyway, I stayed in a flop house because we didn't have any money. The whole goal was to bring resources to this place. We weren't staying in luxury. The goal was to bring that the money that could afford luxury to the people we were trying to help, to this particular community we're trying to help. And I'll never forget, it was in Guyana, and it was a hotel, and I can't call the name of the hotel, but it was a hotel in Georgetown. Guyana, y'all know, well, actually these days, I don't think people of a certain age know what I'm talking about when, or there's a certain memory that's triggered when I say Guyana, and Georgetown. But I think most of the people that might be listening to me probably aren't associated with that. But anyway, it's a South American country that is, definitely a lot of folks in the diaspora, live there. The African diaspora live there. Yeah, a lot of folks from the African diaspora live there. It is very much Caribbean, or Caribbean, as they might say. And anyway, it's beautiful and lush, but there's a lot of poverty there. And so we were staying The flop house where we stayed in was Georgetown, but the place where we were supporting, where we were helping this minister build out, he was a local minister, like from Guyana, from actually this little town, it's called Sophia. Sophia, we would say Sophia, they is like Sophia, they call it Sophia. Anyway, we were helping this minister build out his church basically and provided resources to him and their congregation. And anyway, so we couldn't, there wasn't enough room for us to stay. He didn't have the space to put us up at his place because it's very small. So we stayed in a flop house in Georgetown. And anyway, like the walls were thin. You heard what was happening. You knew what it was and you kept it cute. Like it was none of your business. Hindsight 2020, like regardless of whether or not it was even if it wasn't a mission trip that I felt was, we were like truly not being weird. I don't know that I would have, knowing what I know now, would I allow my, how old was I at the time? Was I 16? My 16-year-old self to go on that trip knowing that we were going to stay in a flop house? Probably not, if I'm honest. Absolutely not. I don't think my parents truly understood where we were staying or what the place was. Maybe they did. I don't know. I didn't feel unsafe. Let me say this. I didn't feel unsafe. Not in the least bit. And I think there was probably a little bit of extra safety around us because we were Americans, but at the same time, we were probably easy targets to rob. Anyway, I was too young and silly but I was naive. And then I was around a bunch of adults that said it was cool to be here. So I'm okay. But no, if I understood if being an adult now, there's no way that my 16 year old would be staying in a flop house, because of the connotation, because at the end of the day, regardless of the sex work that's happening, people love to victimize poor people. It's just anybody in power. People in power like to victimize poor people. I think my mind would immediately go to that. What's the police situation looking like? What's the government situation looking like? Like, and I might not be being fair, so just I apologize now, but my natural mind would be like, you are absolutely not doing that. I would even have a hard time sending my 16-year-old by themselves, which is what I did, with a group of people without me. But maybe that's just me being uber protective. And at the end of the day, I appreciate my parents for giving me that autonomy because I did learn a lot. I did grow. I do have a different perspective of Guyana than I had before and want to go back just to continue to support the economy there just because it's a beautiful place and want to support it when we are able to travel. And I'm trying to get my whole family to go down there, so we'll see. And actually, my hubby, I'm sure I shared this before, but my hubby is best friends with a family who's Guyanese. And they're not from the Georgetown, Sophia area, but they're obviously familiar with that area. And so one of these days we're going to go back. But anyway, what was my point about talking about Georgetown and Guyana, which is the flop house. And anyway, I stayed in a flop house, and it was wild. And so, yeah, if you Google flop house, I should have just said Google flop house. It always leads to a long story, don't it? Anyway, if you Google flop house, you'll kind of get an understanding, and it probably will be a piece of what I just explained, because ultimately a flop house is whatever a flop house is to that region, to those people. But for this intensive purposes, Hotel Coppelia was not one of those places where you would take the family. It's a hard place and probably true to history, it was a hard place to be. You went there you, and by you, I mean predominantly men, went there to get their rocks off. It was a sex work business. And so anyway, in this film, it is portrayed as very seedy, and actually, oh, there's so many doggone layers in it that are troubling to me. It's wild. But before I go on, let me go ahead and tell you who starred in this thing. And I will apologize now. I'm not familiar with these actors. And hold on, let me try to see what would be the best way to do this, because I want to tell you who they played. Oh, so there is Nashla Bogart. I forgot her name, but she's the lead character. Cindy Lundy, Jazz Villa, who, the important thing to know about Jazz Villa is that, if I'm understanding this thing correctly, Jazz Villa, who probably is like a, Jazz Villa is an actor, theater director, and playwright born in Havana, Cuba. On blah, 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 blah. Anyway, so I was trying to look to see if he was like a drag queen, but he's not. Because, and I actually don't know if their pronouns are he, his, but this, the IMDb page, which is not a totally reputable source, says his latest work. So without being disrespectful, I'm just going to go with what his IMDb says, which is his, that his pronouns are his. So I'm going to just say his, without totally knowing how Jazz likes to identify. The reason why I'm bringing up Jazz is because, well, let me just give you this. So this, Nashla Bogart is a madam. Is she the madam? Yeah, she's the madam. So it's, and I said a flop house. I did all of that to explain a flop house, but now that I'm talking about it, it's really a brothel. It's not a flat, well, a flop. Anyway, I'm using semantics at this point. The point is that there's this establishment that is a sex, it's a place where you can entertain with sex workers. And the head of this house is played by Nashla Bogart. I cannot remember the name of her character, but basically she's running this thing. She's running this thing in the way that it's something like a nightclub where you do some little, there's some entertaining happening, but you can also essentially pay to be with the sex worker of your choice. And it, among the core of sex workers that I'll call her the madam, that the madam has, is Jazz Villa's character, whose name I don't remember, but Jazz Villa's character is. And I watched this, and then I thought about it because I wanted to be fair in the language, and I wanted to be true, or not fair, I wanted to be true in my language. And I'm Jazz Villa in this, the character that Jazz played, I'm thinking that the character that Jazz played was trans, because during the day was dressed up, hair in a, in like a bob, pinafore, skirt and dress, made up very prim and proper, but nevertheless, like a sex worker. So, you know, but the aesthetic was, I'm the one that you want. I'm classy. I'm the one that you want. I was selling a certain, fantasy for, not a fantasy in terms of, whatever the client wanted, selling whatever the client wanted, right? But that when they would go to bed, that they didn't take their wig off, and that when they woke up, they didn't take their wig off. There were a few times where they took their wig off, which leads me to believe that they were trans. And so anyway, so I'm just going to say for the purpose of this review, Jazz Villa's character is trans. Trans in 1965. Trans in 1965 in the sex work industry, where you were very public. And in the middle of, and I'm saying this in astonishment because I'm like, in my mind, what I'm hearing of listening to queer media is that in the 60s, if trans women, especially trans women of color, are victimized at high rates now, it was probably higher in the 60s because women in general were treated like things, period. And then if you were considered to be quote unquote deviant for any reason, oh, you were the trash too. So, you know, so Jazzvilla's character is a trans woman working in an industry in a place where, and let's be real, like, so they're sex workers, but they weren't treated with respect. And not in the, even in the 60s, you know, the term at the time was prostitute. And that's not a term of endearment. That's a derogative term. And so they were treated like things. Women in the home, women in the home who were married were treated like a thing. Couldn't have their own bank account. Had to have, the bank account was in their husband's name, couldn't have their own money unless their husband gave it to them, right? Single women had no autonomy. They were the property of their parents, or definitely their father, until such time as they got married, and at that time they became the property of their husband, essentially, from all intents and purposes. And that's just in the United States. And I'm saying that that's in the United States. It's the prevailing thought across the globe, I'm sure, in the 60s. And so I'm gobsmacked because, so not only is this it's the sex workers' work, and sex work was looked upon as being just downright awful. And the people who were engaging with that, unless you were the man, you were treated like trash. So not only that, so for a trans, I guess what I'm really saying is for a trans woman to be among women who did not have much, who were not seen to be the darlings of the community, who were also seemed to be a pariah, I'm thinking that's double danger for her. But nevertheless, just out. And what I think I liked about this movie is probably very real, because I'm here, Diamond say this all the time. Diamond from Marsha's Place say this all the time, that, you know, men, cis men, have been attracted to trans women all along. It's just when they've been, many of them have been doing it in secret, and they don't want to, when there's a chance, and this is just, I believe at this point, this is her theory, because I don't know that there's any evidence to prove this, but other than her lived experience, when they are confronted with the reality that they might have to then confess to someone else who sees them as cis and cis heteronormative and only goes after cis women too, when they are confronted with the idea that they might have to explain their attraction to non-cis women, they can't confront it. And so they take their frustration out on, they blame the trans woman for their attraction to the trans woman, and then they punish her. And so I'm thinking, I'm like, so wow, you really got it. But nevertheless, oh shoot, my actual point with that was supposed to be that what we know is what is true, which is attraction, sexuality is a spectrum, and you are attracted to what you are attracted to. Like, you're sexually attracted to whatever sexually attracts you. And so Men have been sexually attracted to all sorts of women, including trans women, forever, and have probably been more ruthless than what we are able to see on TV and are exposed and rally against, even though we're still dealing with transphobic, hateful, murderous people who are also attracted to trans people and who just need to they need to not be violent towards the people they're attracted to, and they need to work on themselves and work on not caring about what other people. I got a lot more work to do than that, but anyway, how about they just not harm trans women and leave trans women alone, period. Going back, my point was that men have been attracted, seemingly cisgender men have been attracted to trans women forever. And I was surprised to see it, but then also ashamed to think, what, girl, you thought this started in the 2000s? You thought this started, really? You thought this started in the 2000s? You thought this started in 1990s? In the 90s? So it was refreshing to see it, but I was also scared at the same time, because I'm like, okay, I have this thing. I don't like to see black women. I don't like to see trans women. I don't want to see in my media them being hurt. I don't want to see that. I don't. Unless they are I don't want them to be victims. How about that? I don't like seeing them being victims, because, baby, we got that in real life. We got it in spades in real life. Like, I don't need to see that in the media that I'm choosing to consume. And so when I was watching this, when we were introduced to Jazz Villa's character, I'm thinking, please don't do me like that. Please let us just, I know that there's going to be a conflict here. I know that there's going to be a lot of rough and tough stuff happening. Please don't do me, don't put that in, don't do that to Jazz Villa's character. Please don't. And spoiler alert, Jazz Villa's character is totally fine. Jazz Villa's character is traumatized, but traumatized in the way that sex workers are treated like things and are used and abused and go through a wartime conflict in that way. And when I'm saying used and abused, I'm talking about they're caught in between warring military factions. And it's bigger than what they do, even though what they do is the reason why they are part of this conflict in one way or the next. But Jazz Villa is not victimized for being trans. Although he's humiliated, there's a moment, I guess, where the character, the trans woman, is used and something hateful is said to her, but that was it. Like, It was a hateful expression that was shared, and then no more. And I'm like, okay, I can appreciate that. So I will just share that there is no anti-trans actions in this film, which I appreciate. Because, baby, I imagine the itch. Sometimes these liberal directors and writers want to be so PC. Or not so PC, but like they want to be so inclusive that they also want to put that imagery in the film. And I just don't know that we need it to understand that trans women need to be protected, and they're often not. Like, I don't know that we need, anyway, I'm reminded of them. I'm like, my goodness, like, that's, who is that for? Who are you trying to, anyway, let me let that go, because we're not talking about that terrible series. We are talking about Hotel Capella. Anyway, so I guess my point is, from my perspective, and again, I would love for Marsha's plate to talk about this, but I don't know that they've seen it. I don't know that any of them has seen it, but I would love to hear a trans person's perspective of this character. Maybe it's perceived the way that I perceived it. Maybe there's some other problems with it, with the portrayal. I just don't know. But there is no physical violence against this character, which I appreciate. However, there is a lot of violence in this thing. It is in the middle of a conflict, after all. This film is literally set in the middle of a second military coup that has happened in the Dominican Republic. So I tried to look up this history, and for fear of confusing things and not wanting to water down history that is very important and integral to the history of the Dominican Republic and the documents, the U.S. interference. Boy, the way that the U.S. interferes is old as time, old as this country in terms of other countries' politics. The way that the U.S. interferes to get what they want, like the only purpose that the only reason why they interfere is to get what they want out of the deal, has nothing to do with stabilizing the country, has nothing to do with rights, equity, or resources, bringing resources to a community, none of that. It is all about supporting the aims and the efforts of the United States. It's wild. Like, I knew this, but like, just to see it in film and to be reminded that literally you don't even have to believe the filmmakers. You don't even have to believe the filmmakers' portrayal of the US government when they come in to this movie, because duh, they totally do come in, looking at the conflict, because again, this is based in reality. But, it's based on a true story. It's loosely based on true events. How about that? But yeah, like literally look up the conflict. What is this conflict called? I looked it up, but anyway, it is, a conflict that happened in the Dominican Republic between February 1965 and, was it September? It was over by September, something like that. But the second conflict began in September. Well, hold on, let me just go back and be sure. Dominican Republic conflict. Yeah, 1964. So it was the Dominican Civil War is what it was. And I know that the film absolutely does give little, those little info cards that they share at the beginning of a film or at the end of a film. And so anyway, this was the Dominican Civil War. And basically, again, I do not want to disrespect the, I said it's 1964. So it was April 24th, 1965 through September 3rd, 1965. That was when the conflict took place. And in that short time, not only were two factions in the Dominican Republic warring, the people in power, and then the military power that took over from the people in power. And then the faction of people that wanted to support the old power. But then here comes the U.S. military, again, protecting the U.S.'s interest, not that of the Dominican people. And of course, you know, they're on the side of, I think they end up on the side of not the military, but the original faction of people in power. And I'm like, why are you in this? Like, you always find yourself in something. Anyway, but so this film is set in the middle of this war, in the middle of this civil war, where the U.S. government gets involved. Anyway, so long story short, there is this brothel that is led by this madam. And the opening scene of this is business as usual, but this is like the harsh reality of living in a brothel and being a sex worker. There is a woman of Haitian descent. It's established that she's of Haitian descent, or at the very least, her family is in Haiti. Or is her family in Haiti? Shoot, I think I missed the line there. I missed the through line there. But I definitely got the sense that, stepping back a little bit, when I say the diaspora is here, what I'm saying is Afro-Latina people are represented in all of their colors. So there is a very brown skin character who we're introduced to in the very beginning. And for some reason, I'm remembering it. I might be misremembering. But for some reason, I think her husband is somehow detained, and she's like he's Haitian and she's not Haitian. Something like that. For some reason, Haiti comes up for me and I can't remember why. But this character, I guess we're meant to just understand that there is a direct relationship with Haiti and Dominican Republic, that both of them are touched by the diaspora and that both the African diaspora, so it's Afro-Latino, and that, you know, there's some harsh stuff happening. And long story short, we meet this character on the kitchen table. She's pregnant and they're giving her an abortion on the kitchen table. And this is meant to give you a reminder of some of the things that these women had to do. They were forced to do, because perhaps contraceptives just weren't something that was widely used in their industry. And then also medical care, let alone terminating, the ability to terminate pregnancy was not something that was widely supported, or you couldn't go into a hospital and get that support. And so they literally set up a clinic in their kitchen, the kitchen of the brothel. And it is a wild scene, to say the very least. There's a lot of It's a graphic scene. How about that? It's a graphic scene. And at the end of the graphic scene, after they do what they need to do to abort her baby, the madam essentially walks in. She's basically overseeing the other women, caring for this woman who is having the abortion. And she walks into the room basically, after having come outside, and I guess she was at one moment she was planting something, or at the very least she just was picking up milk is what she was doing. We're introduced to the madam because she was picking up milk, and she goes to the awning of her hotel and has one of her handymen help fix one of the letters in the hotel's name, and then she goes in. And you're not 100% sure what she is. You walk into the, when we're introduced to the Hotel Capella, it looks like there's a stage in the front and there are chairs and little small, it looks like you're walking into a lounge basically. And then you hear the screams or the moans of this woman who is essentially on this makeshift operating table getting an abortion. And she walks in and matter-of-factly just says, boop, boop, boop. She starts directing orders. The procedure is complete. She immediately instructs everybody to clean up. And then she asks, well, who's going to cook dinner? And then we come to know that the woman that was on the table getting the abortion is also the cook in the place. And after going through that traumatic experience of having the procedure, this medical procedure in this very non-medical environment, very dangerous. She says, after having endured what she endured, because there's no anesthesia, let's be real, no anesthetics to speak of. She then says, oh, I think she said chicken or something earlier. And then the madam is like, oh, okay, cool. And then she keeps it moving and everybody else just kind of keeps it moving. Like the people cleaning up the table, and old girl is getting herself together to get ready to go and lay down for a spell. And she's like, I don't know. She turns to one of the sex workers and she's like, I don't know how y'all do that. How do you do it? And one of the sex workers she's talking to responds and says, the same way you did. And which implies that in the same pain and anguish that you went through. And then we keep it moving too. Because at the end of the day, everybody there has a role. Everybody here in this ecosystem, there's a chain of command. There's a top dog in this establishment is the madam. And the madam barked the orders and she went on off. And then in that moment, you get the sense that these folks aren't here because they want to be here. They're here because this is the opportunity that they have and they're taking it. And that was the opening scene. That was the very opening scene. And then we move on. And so it kind of sets the pace and sets the tone for this film. And so yeah. Oh, here's the other thing. The even though I spent the time explaining Jazz Villa's character, them being trans is not, how can I put it? It's not a big deal until what? Darn near an hour into the film when the character makes it a big deal, only because she wants to make sure that, I mean, she's a prostitute. I say prostitute, she's a sex worker. Because I'm trying to work that term out of my head, because prostitute is a pejorative term, and sex work, if a person is choosing to do that, even if it's to try to get a better life for themselves, like that's not, it's a job like anything else. Anyway, so I'm trying to, forgive me for using that word, but like sex worker. So anyway, she's a sex worker after all, so she's been doing this. But in this there's a moment later, much later in the film, like a darn near an hour into this hour and 56 minute film, where she has this moment of questioning, am I going to be safe? And then you're reminded, oh yeah, because even today, trans women in general, but trans women specifically, have to make sure. There's always that moment, I'm sure, especially listening to Marsha's plate and listening to Diamond and Mia talk, there's always that moment. And even Zaire talk, there's always that moment where a trans person needs to understand, am I safe with the person that I'm with? And as a cis woman, that's something that I take for granted. I take it for granted because I never had to think about that, except when I'm with somebody. Well, I guess I think about it. I guess I do think about it, but I don't think about it in terms of life or death. I think about it in terms of, oh, is this person a creep? Let me get gone. Not that I'm always automatically thinking that something traumatic can happen to me. And maybe that's naivete on my part, because how many women are victimized by people that they know? How many women are victimized by people? Yeah, how many women are victimized by people that they know? And in a romantic situation, I don't know the math on that, but I'm sure it's high. And so anyway, but it's not been something that has ever been a part of my life. Being safe, sure, but not thinking that something was ever going to happen to me. Whereas, maybe I should have been less naive about certain situations, but nevertheless, I'm coming to understand that it is a definite part of a trans person, specifically a trans woman's life, that when she's engaging with a new romantic partner or someone who could be a romantic partner, that the first thing that they need to think about is, am I going to be safe with this person? Anyway, so there's that moment, that hour into this nearly 2 hour film where we are reminded that, oh yeah, this character needs to understand, this character needs to understand if she's going to be safe. Anyway, so do I want to spoil this whole thing for you? I don't know that I want to spoil the whole thing for you. I think what I will say is, it's in the middle of the Civil War, right? So there's one point where a guerrilla group comes into the establishment, but they're unknown to the madam and the rest of the women. And they essentially scope out the place, and then they come back like a couple of days later and set up shop. It's the beginning of the coup. And then when the tides turn, the U.S. comes and runs the coup faction out. And then they set up shop in this, in the Hotel Capella. And I guess that without giving away too much, again, I already set it up in the very beginning that women in the 60s didn't have any autonomy, and women in the home were treated like trash, except the fact that, oh, what set a woman who was married with kids apart from a non-married woman, or dare say it, even a sex worker, was that there was the value of them as being a wife, a housekeeper, and a mother, right? That was their value. That's what set them apart from women who didn't have kids, who were single, and who were sex workers. And so the women were already treated like trash or treated like property. So there is a moment where these women from both factions, from the coup faction, from the United States faction, they're treated like prostitutes. In this context, they are treated like prostitutes, not like sex workers, like where there's this even transaction and there's a respect for the work that's happening, that's taking place. No, they're treated like prostitutes. And they're not even paid their what they're owed in some instances. There's also something that I need to mention. There are three lesbian women who are introduced here. Two of them are sex workers, and they're engaged in a romantic relationship with each other. And then one is a part of the coup military faction. And in this context, she's revered, actually. She's seen, the woman's a part of the coup attempt. She is seen as fearless and fierce. And she seemed to have been given respect. And I appreciated seeing that, because again, in the 60s, if you weren't the norm, you were abnormal. And to be abnormal was to be awful. And so, like, we have too many examples. Like, yeah, too many examples of queer women being victimized because they were queer. Queer people in general being victimized because they were queer. And so anyway, so we have this strong woman who is queer. Obviously, she's not like super open about it, but she's queer and she's identified by one of the queer women in the brothel as being as much. And so they have a few tender moments, but not a lot. Because again, you can't have too many, because they're literally in the middle of a conflict. The only reason why this, the queer woman from the military coup is even in the presence of the sex worker is because her group essentially commandeered the building, Hotel Capella. And this whole time, there's another through line, the madam. This madam is running this hotel that has been in her family for decades. She took over the hotel from her father. There is a heartbreaking storyline that the madam deals with that I won't go into a lot of detail with, because I'm going to wrap this puppy up soon, because I've been talking long enough. But she definitely dealt with a lot of trauma as a child. And part of the reason why she is the way she is because, once again, she hasn't really dealt. It's time and again, she hasn't dealt with the trauma that she experienced as a child. And this is very deep trauma too. This place has always been a brothel. So, yeah, you just have to watch this thing. I will say you do need to prepare yourself, because the levels of trauma and the violence that's in this film is a lot. So you do need to be ready to watch this thing. It is not a soft movie at all. It's not tender. It has tender moments, but it's very hard and rushed in places, much like sometimes my episodes. But anyway, it's rushed in places that I wish we spent more time. Like, I wish we learned more about Jazvilla's character, the trans woman. I wish we understood more about the cook who had the abortion at the very beginning. What we learn is that her husband is jailed. And the only reason why she's at this hotel is because she's trying to make money so that she can pay off, she can bribe the people that are holding him, keeping him captive, to get him out. Like, that's literally the only reason why she's here. I wanted to know more about that. I genuinely wanted to know more about the backstories of all of them, including the madam. Because her story is so doggone dramatic, we see flashes of what happened to her literally in flashes, like quick flashbacks, but we don't get enough. We don't get enough of her story, and we see her victimized. And again, this is loosely based on true events. And so I just wanted more out of the story than probably it was able to give me in the 2 hours that it was that we saw. And to be honest with you, it feels like it was trimmed. So it could have been like a 3-4 hour film. In my opinion, this really could have served well as a series. And we could have gotten more context, but I guess you take, you get the, you, you do what you can with the opportunities that you're given. And so they weren't offered a series, they were offered a movie, but I'm thinking if they were to get another opportunity at this, this series would be a good series, even though it would be a limited series because there's a beginning, middle, and end to this entire story. There's a lot of backstory that we could be getting, a lot more color to these characters. But nevertheless, it is a very good film. Again, I agree with the raters, the Rotten Tomato raters, that this thing is 92% fresh because it's a good film. It's a really good film. And it's a slice of history that begs for to be explored, basically. And so for that, I say watch this film and hopefully you enjoy it. And with that, I'm going to call this show, I'm going to call this episode rather. So thank you so much for listening. If you have any thoughts about Hotel Coppelia, the Dominican Civil War, anything that I've said that was incorrect, I apologize if I used incorrect language. Yeah, just charge that to my brain, not my heart. I really do want to learn more. If you have any, point me to any websites that I can learn a little bit more, I'm open to that. If you click on the show notes, there is a link that will take you to my anchor.fm page. And you can leave me a message, a positive one, obviously, but if it, you know, if you have a comment or whatever, go ahead and leave it. And I'm a big girl. I will listen. If you want to, rate my show favorably and leave a positive message on, the Purple app, the Apple or Spotify app, you're welcome to do that too. And even doing so helps raise the visibility of the show. So I appreciate you for doing that. Also, if you want to share this show, do that. Absolutely do that. I appreciate you for that. Share the show with people in your friend group, your enemy group, whatever. Just sharing it is how you can help me keep doing this hobby thing that I do, and spread the reach of this show. I was recently looking at the analytics, and a lot of you guys are listening to Black Summer that I did last year around this time. You were listening to Black Summer, or you were listening to Who Killed Malcolm X, that episode I did over that documentary. Of course, you're still listening to Twisted Melodies, which I think that's one of my more popular shows because it's about Donny Hathaway. And we're coming up on May soon enough. So I, you know, if you are able to see that traveling play, because the Twisted Melodies episode I did was in direct response to me watching the Twisted Melodies play that comes here, or it had come here before COVID, come here every year. And it's interesting because now I live a block away from the theater where it where it was done, but anyway, or not very far from the theater where it was played, but anyway, or it was literally a play, so it was performed at this particular theater, because I'm in the theater district, or the arts district, I guess is what they call it now. Anyway, but it was in direct response to me watching that thing, having viewed it. And having an emotional response to it. I think I recorded that episode like a couple of hours after I watched it because I was so moved. So anyway, if you have an opportunity, listen to that episode, but if you have an opportunity to actually support the actor, I think he's the only one in the country who is doing this. And at this point I haven't even looked, but I hope he's taken his play to like Patreon or something like that, or taking it online. So that you can view it anywhere, because it's an important message. But anyway, Yeah, watch that production if you can. It's really, really good. And it keeps the story of Donny Hathaway alive in terms of his creative genius, but then also in terms of how he needed support and how a loved one that you know could be facing the same thing. Or maybe not the same thing, but could need your support in the same way. Which is not to say that his family did not support him the way he needed. It's just the education wasn't there. Our society wasn't as supportive as we are now. Wasn't as knowledgeable and aware of the better treatments that are available for folks who are living with mental health conditions. So anyway, very important piece of art. Definitely watch it, check it out, and support that artist. Anyway, talk long enough. Thank you so, so much for listening. I truly do appreciate you. Until next time.